I accept that we should and let me welcome all the honorable members and the honorable Deputy Minister Lennart and your officials. Welcome to the staff of Parliament and all other visitors after a long recess during which different parties campaigned for elections, and I think we had a very successful election campaign and election outcome. Many analysts are saying that this is a maturation of our democracy. It's good for the country, it's good for our people, it's good for members of parliament, and what they were doing during their recess. Now, this is a first meeting after a long recess. The agenda is before us. I want us to look at the apologies, Secretary. Any apologies that need to be noted? Before that, Honorable Mukhalapa.
Of Honorable Sharon Sharma, the political committee.
Okay. I'm happy you pronounced correctly. Sarahma, not that man.
Thanks, Chair. Honorable Pumlo and I still have the Justice Committee, but you don't have it.
Okay. And Vino?
Thank you, Chair. I have five observations. The first one from Honorable T. Kenny. She's not feeling well. The other one from Honorable M. Lekota. She went for medical checkup. And the third one is from Honorable M. Nwango. She's not in Cape Town. The fourth one from Honorable Fit Dudley. She's attending the Chief Risk Forum. She will join us later. And then the last one from Honorable H. Kropper. She will join the meeting later. Thank you, sir.
Who's that, Kropper?
Yes, Secretary.
Okay. Those are the apologies. Thank you very much. The apologies are all noted. Let's look at item number three. I want to persuade you to agree that we start with item number five. We have this presentation and then we can take the fourth quarter. In fact, we should have instructed that with all the time, that with the political presentation. We have a presentation, not unless the presenter on this item is not here with us. But if he's here or she's here, then we should start with that one. Honorable CM Linda, can we then defer to you to lead us and delegate on item number five? Okay, issue on Westminster.
Chairperson, if you'll allow me and with the minister meetings permission. They keep coming in, so my delegation is bigger than the size of your committee right now. And it's just odd. But allow me to introduce the team. My name is Leonard Landis. I'm Deputy Minister of International Relations and Cooperation. On my right is the Acting Director General, Mr. Khabo Mahai. On my left is Ambassador Ibrahim Saleh, Deputy Director General, Global Governance. Next to Ambassador Saleh is Advocate Saleh, Special Advisor to Minister. Next to Advocate Saleh is Mayor Sengi Mbengu, Acting CFO. At this point, allow me to table an apology from our Chief Financial Officer, Chairperson. He's on
standing. That's
Ramachal. Next to Mbengu is Ms. Doris Kotza. She is present and acting on behalf of the Chief Operating Officer. appendix to her is Zaire Elwin. Next to Zaire is the chief of staff in the office. Next to him is Eric Rafatema. He's also in my office. Next to Eric is Pumrube, who is chief of staff in the minister's office. Can I also take this opportunity, Chair, to just explain that Ambassador Jerry Machia had reached the end of his contract. My information to you was incorrect. Had reached the end of his 5-year contract, and given the resignation of Ambassador Kingsley Mamabolo at the United Nations, we then immediately appointed Ambassador Jerry Machuma as our ambassador to the UN in New York City. I'm going to ask Ambassador Sali to make a presentation on this in Sahara, and with your permission, I'll hand over to him.
Just a follow-up. Just for point of
information, based on the information we were just given by the Deputy Minister, what is the status of the government of the city?
It's a normal situation. In fact, we've appointed Mr. Khabo Pai as Acting DG. The process of appointing a DG is as is normal.
Thank you very much. Ambassador Sali, I'm sorry, can I just interject for a minute? Ambassador Jerry Machila was say you retire, but
it's
the end of the contract and has subsequently been appointed to the New York City as ambassador. Can I hear members on this matter? I want to suggest that we should invite him whenever he's got time. Perhaps between now and December when he's at home, because ambassadors are not allowed to go home or come home all the time. Just to come in here and come and say bye-bye so that we can also say bye-bye to him. And if we are agreeable to that, that each of the honorable members should tell a one paragraph, a two paragraph, a full page, whatever they want to say in any other language, then we can put this together. When he comes here, we can just hand it over to him. He will know what Mkalapa said about him, about him, Masango, etc., etc. Because I think, as it has been, he really has made a very valuable and immense contribution in the diplomatic service, in the foreign service for the country, spending before 1994 and from 1994. Up to today. So he's been part of the evolution of our foreign service and our diplomacy. He's led under different political principles, as minister as well as president. So he's really served our country well. Well, it doesn't not speak as if he's died.
No.
But I'm just saying, it would be good to say, Galagata Siamok. Are we? Anything else on the matter?
On our agreement.
Thank you very much, Chair. Without wasting much of the committee time, I think we are in agreement with the proposal that you have put forward. I think Ambassador Machila came into the department after the departure of South Kayan and Saluma. And it was quite a very uncertain time, and I think it brought a lot of attention to the department and set certainly made a huge impact. I think our gift to him should have been the Foreign Service Bill and the rationalization of SATA. I hope by the time we see him, at least there is progress on those things, because of that he's elected for the department. But we are in agreement with your proposal, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kalata. Honorable Kalata.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think I'm sitting the queue from the chair to say that yes, let's invite the ambassador to come and teach him farewell. And I think what you were saying is, you know, just emulating what he, the contribution that he did in this department. People must be able to know while they're still alive, so what kind of a contribution that we, you know, in the life of the ordinary. I don't want to get cases when I'm dead. I want to get them when I'm still alive. And I think that is proper, so that we can be able to sharpen it, to be able to sharpen that to even more. I think really let's not be very stringent with good positive words. There's no way can break you and let can break you. I think really the ambassador, we congratulate him. We did talk when he was here. We told him that the positive things that he did in the department. I've learned from him, and you know he took advice very constructively. You know, especially with a man with such immense kind of knowledge. He was not puffed up. He was not proud. But he was a humble man of the people. I think probably all of us from here we have learned so much from, you know, from the Majida, the ambassador. You know, he led this department with dignity, with poise, you know, and he's...
You know, you could say that day. Yeah. Okay. I thought you could say that day, or you could also...
Okay. Yeah, but I was just saying that... Words are very important. With our good words, that affect our people. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. I think we wait for that day. We are in agreement.
Welcome, but we're told that you will not be here. And that the meeting was going to run very smooth without you. No, I can't give you the name.
Morning,
I don't know what will happen to them.
Morning, Jessica. No, I need to give a baba, I'll be late. Mm. I don't know who is discussing the effects of trying to come back. But Chef, sorry for coming late.
Yeah.
I was delayed because of the traffic.
Yeah. No, at all.
Yeah. Also, I would like to apologize. I have to rush to the Chief's forum, but I'll come and join the meeting.
No problem. Ambassador, let's now defer to you. Sorry for the earlier interjection.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Mr. Minister. Today, I'm going to go through my presentation, which is basically going to talk on the progress made under the UN auspices towards the realization of the rights of the self-determination by the people of Western Sahara. Now, Honorable Chair, the issue of Western Sahara dates back when it was declared in 1963 that the territory of Western Sahara, which was a Spanish colony, was then included in the list of non-self-governing territories under Article 73 of the UN Charter, to which the UN General Assembly Resolution 1514, 1960,
supply, on the granting of independence to colonial countries and peoples, particularly in the world, but at that time its focus was Africa. Now for 50 years this matter has been sitting there, and everything related to the Western Sahara is primarily about international illegality. It's a case of international law or the failure of international legality. And it's a very interesting case study for anybody that wants to know about the difference between international legality and unilateralism. I want to set a context because it's, as we all know, that South Africa affirms the rights of the people of the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic to exercise their right to be like all the other countries on the continent, to be decolonized, essentially. This matter still resides in the fourth committee of the UN, and in the fourth committee these are countries that are waiting for decolonization. So whenever we say that Africa's decolonization, we should always bear in mind that it is not yet complete. That there is a territory called Western Sahara, and this territory is occupied by a colonial master. In this case, irony is that that colonial master is the Kingdom of Morocco, which occupies, has been occupying this territory illegally, and that matter has not been resolved. The result of this occupation, and I think that honorable members should take note, that the result of this occupation has caused nearly 100,000 Sahrawi refugees to live in what can only be described as the most abject of conditions, in a environment that is probably the most hostile in the world. So for 40 years they've endured, they live in tents, they've been living in tents. The reason for them living in tents is because they still cherish within them the dream of going back to their rightful home, which is Western Sahara, and they live in these refugee camps just across the border in Algeria, southern Algeria, in the middle of the Sahara Desert. They have named their refugee camp after towns that they left in the occupied territories. There are numerous camps, and it is very, very heartbreaking when you see those camps, and also then realize that these people have been waiting for decolonization since the 76. So this is why South Africa affirms the right of the people of the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic in their bid for self-determination, as is their right according to all international legality. And that has not yet been realized. The matter came up in the African Union. This matter is a very contentious issue even amongst Africans, because the cardinal principle that was adopted by the OEU, which was the sanctity of colonial borders, does not apply in this case as long as Morocco is occupying the territory. In the OEU in 1984, this matter was at the pitch, which then resulted in the withdrawal of Morocco, together with 15 other African members, led by the late President Mobutu Sese Seko. It is an issue that divides the continent, and it continues to divide the continent. The AU then, in 1984, devised and developed what was the settlement plan. The settlement plan was then adopted by the UN, and the UN then convened a mission in the occupied territories. The mission is called MINURSO, and the primary mandate of this mission was to conduct a referendum that would then allow the people of Western Sahara to express their desire, whether they accept the Moroccan claim and want to be part of Morocco, or whether they want to be independent. There's also been, this is an area that has experienced a lot of conflict, in that the colonial overlord, which was Spain, decided to withdraw, the landlord speaking in the middle of the night, and gave illegal control of the territory to two countries. The northern half was given to Morocco to administer, the southern half was given to Mauritania. This resulted in a liberation struggle. Liberation struggle was fought very hardly. There were South African weapons which still are displayed in museums. The old apartheid regime supplied Morocco with the weapons, so you don't see them, they capture them, and they keep them in a museum. It was a very bloody conflict, and the result was that Mauritania then withdrew or relinquished their control of the southern half, and Morocco remained occupied the Mauritanian control part and claimed that territory belonged to them. The MINURSO, that is the UN mission, and their primary objective of conducting a referendum, has not happened. There have been various stops and starts. Part of the problem was that in the long years of Moroccan occupation, there have been large population shifts, and Moroccans have moved into the territory. So a referendum of the original inhabitants of Western Sahara becomes a very difficult matter. The UN then embarked on an identification process, because Sahrawis are in possession of Spanish identity cards. There was a Spanish census done in 1971, and on the basis of that, the UN then began the arduous process of identifying people. However, that did not result in a referendum, and the matter was referred back to the Security Council. At that time, the Secretary General then appointed American former Secretary James Baker as his special envoy. Special envoy then came up with what was infamously called Baker Plan 1, which was basically giving the Moroccans a carte blanche for annexing the territory. This was contested by Western Sahara and Algeria and other countries. He went back to the drawing board and then came up with a second plan, which was Baker Plan 2, which, although it had imperfections as far as the Sahrawis were concerned and didn't address the issue of international legality, but it was adopted by Western Sahara. However, the Moroccans rejected that. That Baker Plan also fell by the wayside. and the mineral submission still exists, it still carries on with very little to show by success. The one thing that the mineral submission has been successful in is monitoring the ceasefires that exist between Western Sahara, between Polisario and the Moroccan. Honorable Chair, there is a wall in the middle of the desert that runs for more than 1,500 kilometers, where a sand wall is 45. It's also reputed to be one of the most heavily mined areas in the world, and the responsibility of the international community to reduce the number of mines and other unexploded ordinances from the conflict carries on, and the camp still exists. In this year, Honorable Chair, in March, Morocco expelled 73 civilian staff members from Minoso. These were UN staff, in which included members from the African Union, as retaliation against the Secretary General's visit to the territories. And in a speech, he used the word occupation to describe the status of the territory. The use of the word occupation infuriated the Moroccans to the point where they then indicated that they would then expel Minoso. That happened as they had threatened. Created a very, very dangerous situation. We should also bear in mind that earlier this year, the president of Western Sahara passed away and has been replaced by another president. So the situation was very fragile, and that could have easily resulted in the resumption of the conflict in that part of the world. The subsequent reports seem to suggest that the Moroccans might be grudgingly relenting as we see the civilian component of Minoso coming back slowly. But this issue has always had an impact on the stability of that region. On the 29th of April of this year, the UN Security Council voted to extend the mandate of Minoso by a year. This happens every year, whereby the Minoso mandate gets extended, even though there is very little progress on the core mandate of Minoso, which is the referendum. The resolution was supported by 10 countries. However, Venezuela and Uruguay voted against. The council did not take strong measures against the Moroccans because within the council itself, there is what you call friends of Western Sahara. Friends of Western Sahara, a group of UN member states that are probably the closest allies of Morocco on their bid to annex the territory. So it is quite correct, I guess, to talk about the double standards that exist within the council, and this matter is one of the primary examples of this type of duplicity that exists in an unreformed UN system. Honorable Chairperson, the AU, Peace and Security Council, always expressed concern at the lack of process. It is, again, an issue that undermines the whole concept of international legality. The AU chairperson then appointed former President Joaquim Chissano as a special envoy to Western Sahara. The special envoy briefed an informal meeting of the UN Security Council during which he criticized Morocco's decision that it took to expel MINURSO, or the civilian component of MINURSO, and was quite right when he described the situation as being a very dangerous precedent. Special envoy also warned of the risk of military escalation in the region, and it's a very real risk. And the element that makes MINURSO quite unique among all UN missions is the fact that MINURSO doesn't have a component that looks at the protection of human rights in that territory. There have been very lots of gross abuse of human rights of the Sahrawi people, and it is still, the Security Council remains reluctant to then authorize that MINURSO also look at the protection of human rights aspects of the territory. There's also widespread exploitation of the territory's natural resources, principle of that being phosphate. It has one of the richest deposits of phosphate in the world. It also has very, very rich fishing resources. There's recent indication that French company Total might well be resuming its exploration for hydrocarbons in the territory, because the geography suggests that there is, that the territory is very rich of, has potential huge reserves of oil and gas. The territory also holds promise for gold. So those are the factors that underline the Moroccan opposition to relinquishing this territory. The Moroccans are also very opposed to the involvement of the African Union in the question of the decolonization of Western Sahara, and recently wrote a letter to this effect to the UN Secretary General. The Moroccan King wrote also to the chairperson of the AU, and there was strong rumor that the Moroccans were trying to return to the African Union. However, that invitation, which is there from the African Union, previously the OAU, it remains on, of course, the basis that there is no conditionality to the return of Morocco. The Moroccans are reticent to return as long as the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic is represented and has a flag. They would not, they see that, if they come back into the AU, that would on their part be implicit recognition of the Sahrawi Republic. I think Chairperson, I have covered most of the relevant parts. There is, of course, the territory has a special envoy of the Secretary General, who is Ambassador Christopher Ross. The negotiations that the last Security Council resolution then calls for direct negotiations between Morocco and Polisario have not resulted in any fruitful exchange. The status is blocked. The UN Security Council recently reiterated its call for the resumption of the talks, but the deadlock remains, and the deadlock is Polisario insists on the right to have a referendum to be able that their people are able to proclaim their wish whether they want to be part of Morocco, whether they want to be autonomous or have certain amount of autonomy under Morocco, or whether they want to be independent. It's a right that that they are rightfully claiming in terms of all the rules, all the international laws, the African example of decolonization. It is a right that cannot be denied, but we see a situation where it has gone on for more than 40 years as a result of huge suffering. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Osali. Is there any addition? Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And once again, the department has always been a very reliable resource for information on matters like this, particularly for a committee on international relations. And keep up the good work. There's a lot that we could have access to do. There are issues around Syria, there are issues about now famously known as Brexit, there are issues about Ukraine, almost all the time. There's no textbook to refer to. You must be our textbook. Yeah, thank you very much. Honourable members, can I invite comments? Is the head up? Okay. I'll put it. Oh, okay. Come here.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Ambassador, for the presentation, and thank you very much to the DM for always creating us here and creating us with your presence. It's quite going to be easy for you now, because you will be waking up in 20 in an opposition city, and then you will be flying to Cape Town to another opposition city. So it should make life easy. I'm not sure about the blue lights, because in both of the two cities, the blue lights will be prohibited. But we are very much thankful for you for being here always. The issue of the Sahrawis has been a long-standing issue. And then certainly it's one that is a sort of concern. In fact, it has centered our diplomatic relations with Morocco. Let me focus on the issue of the referendum. What is the difficulty in having a referendum? Because I think the minister was there to just make sure that the referendum is taking place. Because of that referendum would definitely settle this matter. Because of if the people in Sahara decide that they want to secede from Morocco and from their own territory, or they want to be part of Morocco. We will be flip-flopping and going around with speculation. Because of part of the issue there is, when you listen to the Moroccans, they say, yeah, but the people there got services. They get services from us. They are happy. They want to be with us. And then on the flip side of the coin, when you go to those countries in Algeria, then they say, look, our human rights are being abused. We are here, we can't go back home. So it has ended up in a political turf war in the north, between Morocco and Algeria. You know the relations, they are strained because of this issue, because of there is no certainty in terms of what is the difficulty of having a referendum. If the Brexit, if the UK can do a referendum as important as a Brexit, I think this one is far much more important than a Brexit referendum. Why is the international community and the AU in particular pushing hard that there be a referendum to settle this matter once and for all? Because that is the only way this matter can be settled. The second issue, Chair, would be on the comments of the Secretary General. In the world of diplomacy, they always say you watch what you say. By using the term occupation, is this really a diplomatic blunder? Is it something that can be put as one of the impediments for the Minister to be deployed or go ahead? I know that they have been deployed and everything. I think the Moroccans were just using a tit-for-tat strategy for that. But in legal international law terms, using the word occupation, what does this mean in the status of the... Because I don't think that a senior official like Ban Ki-moon would use the word carefully. He might use it carefully with very much informed legal opinion of what does it mean and why does he say that. And lastly, it's about the issue of the conditionality of the AU. I think we're heading for a stalemate there as well, because of if the condition of the AU in taking Morocco back into the AU is that they will recognize, they must deal with the Sahrawi issue, and then Morocco says, yeah, well, for us to come back, we don't want you to recognize the Democratic Arab Republic of Sahrawi. It just takes us even 50 years backwards because of there's no change. So I don't see a shift in terms of movement on those. But I think for me the key thing is the popular will, which will be the referendum. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you for your input, Honorable Leila.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, before I get into the issues of Morocco, I'd like to say that the first statement made by Honorable Makhlapa cannot go unnoticed. No, well, the stage is mine. You see, Chairperson, this statement tells you that the ANC has made the opposition to believe that there is democracy in South Africa. This country is actually very lucky to be led by an organization like the ANC. An organization which, when elections go the other way, doesn't say the elections were rigged. An organization which is ready to occupy the opposition benches. And this should remain like this, even in 2019, when the ANC overwhelmingly takes over the country. We shouldn't hear people say the IEC belongs to the ANC, as they sometimes do. Now, coming to the issues of Morocco, Chairperson, I concur with Honorable Makhlapa that the issue of the referendum in the Sahrawi Republic is sacrosanct. It's an issue that should actually be realized. And the issue of the acceptance of Morocco into the EU also. We are at the stage where the Morocco moved out of the EU. If they come back, I think it should be proper that they should only come back after the referendum has been realized in the Sahrawi Republic. The issue of human rights abuses. I wonder where is the International Criminal Court this time around? Because for 50 years, there have been human rights abuses in the Sahrawi Republic. And nowhere have we seen the ICC coming to the picture. I think it's about time that the ICC comes in. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Go to my input.
Thank you. Honorable Maputo, yeah. Maputo.
Thank you very much for the presentation. And I think it's such an eye-opener. And Dr. Makhalapa, I don't know if what you were just saying now. I think people will be able to know who are the real menemenes. I can rather stand for the truth than to be a menemen. Feeling out to the core, to the soul of your own people. That is dangerous. And they come in to be proud about it. I think people must be ashamed.
Yeah,
you can
point the
question. Yeah. No, I'm stealing the platform because it's what Dr. Makhalapa is saying. Okay. Thank you. And
what is your point of order?
My point of order, Chairperson, is that. Chairperson, the point of order. Now, the comment made by the opening comments made by the Honourable Mofalata is now becoming a sort of debate and an attack on the person and name calling. And I think you, as the chair, should ask the member to withdraw the term that she just used and allow the discussion to go forward rather than to get personal. I'm appealing to you.
Thank you. What other thing?
What
was the term?
What was the term you used?
I have sustained the order to the extent that it must not develop into a debate among and between parties and expression of opinion, so that he lashes. She must latch into the issue before us now, which is on Western Sahara. And then
okay.
I think also Honorable Alapa just meant it up.
We are also
moving
motionless. I think also it's a joke here.
Yeah.
But what actually is happening in Western Sahara is really painful. When people want to exercise their right to self-determination, I think it's so inhuman. It's so painful. And you can see that we are not actually the United Nations and the African Union. We are not getting any positive results in that. We can say that it's a yo-yo. However, we as South Africans, we should really, actually, to assist the Western Saharan people to reach their self-determination and to be against this gross human abuse. Yes. So, thank you very much. That it needs all of us who are here to assist the West, the Sahara. They cannot do it on their own, but it needs people who are saying that they are activists of the rights of human beings to be able to assist the Western Sahara. Thank you.
Kalia.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciated the presentation, and I have a more than personal interest in this because at Pan African Parliament, we have a working group that I'm part of that is trying to also assist with the matter. What I don't pick up from the presentation is what is South Africa's direct
involvement with Morocco and with the Western Sahara Republic. But the Security Council is not forceful enough or is not actually doing what its original mandate is. It cannot be right that 40 years later we have this problem and it still hasn't been solved. And the core mandate of both the AU and the UN is to maintain peace and security. So, you know, and we have countries that take sides, and of course that's how the voting always seems to go in the UN. But I want to understand, how forceful are we as South Africa? How much do we want the resolution? That who are we talking to on both sides? And then I just want you made a comment, Ambassador, about the sanctity of colonial borders. I don't understand what you mean when you say that the AU respects the sanctity of colonial borders. Is it that you're saying that the AU does respect the division and the partition of the Sahara, or what is it? And if you will explain that. And then in terms of the referendum, you know, in order to conduct a referendum, there needs to be a platform for both parties to express itself and for a proper system, electoral system, or a structure of sorts to be in place. Who do you think will administer this? Would it be the UN Security Council? Who would do it, and how do you see this playing out? And if the referendum was agreed to, over what time period do you see? Because obviously people have to be registered, they have to be legitimized. I want to understand that process, if you can help. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khadere. Honorable Mkumlana, welcome. We noted your apology.
Thank you, Chef Hassan. Thank you, Chef Hassan. I think that's one of the things which are going to exacerbate the problems. What the ambassador just highlighted, the natural resources which are there in that country. So it means that if before the discovery, even of the hydrocarbons, if they can be discovered, they are going to become a case instead of a blessing for that country. But what I'm interested in here is that which company from which country are exploiting those resources. So that we must be able, I think that it's high time that we up the ante on this issue. You know, one of the things which made apartheid to come to its knees is because of the sanctions against the companies which were trading with apartheid. Mm-hmm. So if we can get the identity of those countries, of those companies, and the identity of the countries, so that we, as the Parliament of the Republic, can start now shouting on top of our voices that those companies are exploiting the resources of the oppressed people, so that they can be dealt with accordingly in the international forum. And number two, Chair, is the issue of the African Union. I think that the African Union must be supported when it took a precondition that before the Morocco can be readmitted back into the AU, it must really realize the sanctity of the freedom of the people of the Arab Democratic Republic. Well, because if we can compromise on that, really we will not be knowing what we're doing. I think that was the South African government, that the strength it must take in the AU, it must be the strength it must take at the UN, so that it must be consistent throughout. Because, you know, these are our brothers and sisters. We cannot afford that they can be exploited at any time, at any point in time in history. We cannot tolerate that. I feel that this must be done because, really, Spain was there, it's known, it's on record. So what's the dispute about the issue that Morocco is occupying that? We also really support South Africa again, that it is not having an embassy in Morocco. it is not represented. We don't say that. Because we cannot. Because we must walk the talk. We must walk the talk. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Want to say anything? Then I'm going to look at something you
have. I really am not. I just want to say, having listened to the presentation, not such a and having appreciated all what has been said, I agree with all the comments.
Yeah, Katsiyabonga, Babu Mpumlwana. Once again, thank you very much for this presentation. I want to join my colleagues to ask about some things I don't understand very well. So the first one is the referendum itself. Because it was known that Western Sahara was a colony of Spain, and Spain withdraws, and Morocco comes in 1975, and you allow Morocco to occupy their country until today. There is no military intervention, there are no sanctions. Now you say there will be, I'm not saying you, I'm referring to the UN. You say there will be a referendum, and you allow Morocco to block the referendum. And the Sahrawi people have their own political organization, the Polisario Front. I didn't hear you saying that perhaps there is a different view from another party within or among the Sahrawi people that does not want self-determination or independence, such that you never need to hold a referendum, if you get my point. Because if you say the Polisario Front is not a legitimate people's representative, then you need to hold, you could say, no, but not everyone does what you are saying, therefore we need a referendum. And if you say that as a UN or as Morocco, then you must hold the referendum and hear the people out. I just feel very bad that the UN is not compelling Morocco or itself is not conducting the referendum through the MONUSCO. It reminds me of what I read about many years ago about the League of Nations. And someone said, I think one historian said, the League of Nations is as weak and as strong as its member states. And it took me a few years just to understand that. Now I can see this thing about the UN. Mm-hmm. That if certain countries are very strong, they can carry out certain things outside the mandate of the UN. If they are weak, they are subjected to the whims of the UN. So it makes the whole international system in order rather very unfair. But that's just my view. Now, I was just going to ask that about the referendum. But what you also did not say very clear is South Africa's position on this matter. And that position, if it could be clarified as a foreign policy issue, where do we stand? Do we say, yes, Western Sahara is a colony and it must be decolonized, and therefore we will use the word occupation when we speak in Parliament, we speak anywhere else, because occupation has an historical meaning, as Mokhalabe and others were saying. Why is Morocco only challenging the most senior official of the UN, Ban Ki-moon, from using the word? What does he say? So, and how, because otherwise, if it is not clarified,
anyone among us who use this word elsewhere as a, hey, you shouldn't have been causing a diplomatic incident. The third letter I thought I will ask about. Is the UN considering any measures or sanctions, economic, any punitive measures against Morocco? Military intervention, expulsion from the UN. I know Morocco is not a member of the OAU because of this matter, and they're still not a member of the AU now. Are there any measures that have been contemplated by the UN? Before we come to the way forward on the list, let's just hear some comments about this from the team. DM?
Chairperson, I'm going to respond to some of the issues raised by honorable members. If I may, in similar vein, reciprocate to honorable Khalaf. But first, let me say, I think the honorable Khalaf was exercising its freedom of expression. And as a loyal, disciplined member of the ANC, I think we must take it on the chin. No, I'm saying that. Please hear me out. Hear me out. It's natural to gloat. Right? They were victorious, and let's accord them that, and accept it as such. That's how I see it. I was here when the city of Cape Town was under the control of the ANC. I'm here when it's under the control of the DA, and similarly with Swaziland. So it's no new experience for me. With regard to the blue lights, my head of staff, Zaire, was concerned. When I first walked into the office in Pretoria, having been sworn in, one of my first tasks was to say to the staff, please understand this and understand it very clearly. I will not have blue lights in my official vehicles, wherever I live. And I've stuck to that position. That's my position. Where others may differ, that's on them to engage with you and explain why they do so.
Okay.
You do have a challenge, though, because our head of state and deputy president will use blue lights, as they did this morning. Down blue lights. So I'll be very curious to see the honorable Patricia Lamille standing in the middle of Blue Line Street and trying to stop those capital games using their vehicles. Now, some more serious matters to this. All that is in a light thing, of course. Why doesn't Sarawi hold an assembly? It cannot do so because, simply put, it is not an independent sovereign state.
Yeah.
So, then what? Well, resolutions have been adopted by the UN. And so, the intention is that, firstly, there should be a census conducted. If there's agreement by all parties, Morocco must agree, then the Sahrawi people must agree. It will be a referendum. Okay. Before that referendum is conducted, there has to be a sense to ascertain who is actually Sahrawi and who is not. Because you see, people in Algeria come in and out of Sahara. People of Morocco come in and out. They are relatives of the Sahrawi people in both Algeria and in Morocco. So you need to clarify just who is qualified to participate in that referendum, firstly. Secondly, we believe that referendum must be held under the auspices of the United Nations with the help of the African Union.
Mm.
Anything else, we'll have a serious problem.
Mm.
Now, the Honorable Khalafa made a point that when he speaks to people of Morocco, and I issues now without that, but that's another matter. They say people get services. Well, because you are in that, you were born in apartheid South Africa. And the white people back then used to say exactly the same. When the international community raised its voice, they would say, what's your problem? These people are getting services. They're well cared for. So that's not the issue. Coming in Mokhalaba through Chairperson. And I've been there. I had the privilege and honor of attending the
50th anniversary of the Solidarity event.
40th anniversary. Trust me. They're not getting services. If the Moroccans are telling you that, tell them I did. They're lying. Now, the Secretary General's comments about occupation chairperson, and I think both of you and the Honourable Cabinet have dealt with that. The AU's conditions. The AU has a constitutive act. Now, in terms of Article 29, if I may, of the constitutive act, you can research it and look it up. There are very clear procedures whereby anybody wanting to join the EU may do so. And by the way, Chairperson and Honourable Members, Haiti has formally applied to join the African Union. Yes, and some say it's not an African
country. I was going to say that.
No, it's an African diaspora. Now, so what Morocco has to do is follow those procedures set out in Article 29. Not a case of sending their king to simply walk in the AU. Now, there's a suspicion amongst us that that is what Morocco will try to do to create this alliance, or to, or as the diplomats refer to it, create an incident. Now, let me deal with the one point the Honourable Maela raised, which is human rights abuse and why the ICC doesn't intervene. Well, I think that's a question we have to ask the ICC, but it also it needs someone to actually sit down and draft something and send it to ICC requesting that charges be laid in terms of their own safety. Okay. The Sahrawi people themselves are not members or signatories to those statutes, obviously. And so they are unable to do that. So that's what it means. The Honourable Kali asks, what is South Africa's direct involvement with Morocco and Western Sahara? Well, I think another Honourable Member did point out, I think it was the only slide, that we have diplomatic relations with Morocco. But our relationship with the Sahrawi people goes way back. And so it's a lot deeper than that, as far as that's concerned. No question of decolonizing of the continent comes into play. And you need to understand what that means. Now, South Africa renders political support and humanitarian assistance to the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic. We do so under the African Renaissance Fund. The Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic has a residential embassy in Pretoria. The South African ambassador to Algeria is accredited to the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic. So there is a constant engagement. Annual support here locally, or domestically, for the annual Western Sahrawi Film Festival is given annually through the South African Department of Arts and Culture. Now, Chairperson, just to touch briefly on Morocco's intentions with regard to the AU. There's two ways to look at it. Because it's fraught with all kinds of danger. Firstly, it is a possible window of opportunity whereby both Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic is recognized by the AU and has membership status. So if they are both in the same body, we can then engage with them as equals. The problem is that the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic's flag flies in the AU. And if Morocco takes its seat in the AU, by implication, it recognizes
Sahara flag. Okay? It's recognized. Now, so the danger, Chairperson, is that whilst we see the opportunities that exist, please understand that potentially it could lead to a conflict between the two parties and within the AU. Why do I say this? Morocco hasn't been sitting back on its own.
It's not sitting back.
No. Mm. Morocco has engaged with a number of European states, France, Spain. Morocco has also engaged with Israel. And Morocco has used its considerable influence on several African states, both to support its position and to de-recognize the Sahrawi Democratic Republic. So once that starts happening, then we, who support the Sahrawi Democratic Republic, are going to fall foul of those countries that either de-recognize or side with Morocco. Now, I've dealt with that. Which company is exploiting resources? Chairperson, we need to do some research unless Ambassador Sami and the rest of the team are aware of the company. But I want to, on this particular matter, Ambassador Sami referred to Total. Mm-hmm. That's a French company. Mm-hmm. But it's not clear whether they are actually exploiting. Mm-hmm. We need to check on that. Now, the Polisario Front recently launched a legal challenge on this matter. It took the matter to the European Court of Justice. It did so in December 2015. Now, the European Court of Justice considered that the agreement, that is the agreement between the European Union and Morocco, signed in 2012, may not apply to the disputed territory of West. So Morocco and the EU get together, sign an agreement, a treaty. Right? The European Court of Justice, 3 years later, then says, no. That agreement is fine. But here it comes to the occupied territories. Again, this is the European Court of Justice calling it occupied territories. There may not be no trade in that occupied territory. Now, this case is likely to have an impact on a number of duty-free agricultural and fisheries products which Morocco exports to the EU, but which originate from the occupied territory. That's the first thing. The other important point to remember is that the European nations have appealed this decision. Now, that appeal process is still in the pipeline. Now, should the Polisario Front be successful, this may influence the opinion of some EU nations. Now, given Brexit and the impact, I'm sorry to bring in Brexit chairperson, because it has an effect. It has an effect. Given Brexit, which in the view of some of us has weakened the European Union, that may give us leverage. The European Union. We can say to them, look, exercise your influence on a member state to recognize Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic, to stop companies from your European member state exploiting the resources of the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic. It's just another possibility, you see, that we could possibly exercise. Now, Chairperson raised the question as to whether what is South Africa's position. I thought I'd made that clear. I certainly hope so. We are fully in favor that the Sahara Arab Democratic Republic be recognized as an independent sovereign state. With all that comes with that. We are of the firm view that the burn, that's the wall that Mr. Sali referred to, is called a burn. Just a wall about as high as the ceiling, but it's heavily mined. And all the mines come from European countries.
I saw them in the museum that Ambassador Sun spoke about. Mm. And some of them come from the USA, by the way. So clearly that referendum has to be held to test the views of the people of the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Party. Do you want to be an independent sovereign state? And if the answer is yes, then that is what will happen. Clearly, Moroccans don't want that. As to why they don't want it, I think somebody needs to go to the Moroccans and ask them to explain, why don't you want to give these people what rightfully they have? And I'd be curious to hear what their response is. Chairperson, those are just a few comments I got arising from the questions and comments from our members.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Deputy Minister. I believe you've covered most of the questions that were raised. I just thought that I should add that the word occupation, as we use it actually in South Africa, because there's evidence for that, we prefer to use illegal occupation. Because that occupation is not just an occupation, it actually is, in terms of international law, it's illegal. So my apologies if I use the word on the occupation. The question of the sanctity of colonial borders, question, and this was a cardinal rule when Africa was decolonizable. And the reason I think that the honorable members probably are quite aware is that Africa, in its deliberations and wisdom, realized that if we were going to then redraw borders on the continent, we saw a glimpse of it in Biafra when there was a secessionist movement, and the continent, I believe, we saw part of that in Mali. We should not be surprised if there's similar moves to partition Libya, but if that were to happen, it would open the Pandora's box on the continent, and that would be, I think that nobody will be able to control that. There are secessionist movements everywhere, from Cabinda
to Oranga to Oranga.
The context. Thanks for the context.
I thought we should, I should just say that with regard to the national resources, for the benefit of the honorable members, you should know that by far and large, the Moroccan foreign policy is a single issue foreign policy. For them, the symbology is very important. So what you would have is they would try and lock some of our business people who don't understand better. And when that happens, there's a very vigilant NGO based in Norway called Ecotwatch, and they are able to give every detail about which company, if it's a ship, the number of the ship, the registration, the flag, the companies involved. So by putting that out, it is an exercise in many and
okay.
I just thought I should
perhaps we'll come back. Let me just hear what Pumblana wants to say. I also want to ask Honorable Kalyan whether there was a discussion in the African Parliament about what view his actually took.
and then with that, then we can just wrap up. I want to suggest a way forward, and perhaps in your comments you can kind of speak. That we, as a committee, we write a letter to the speaker, and after that we slot in a debate in the house, and then we can have different parties saying whatever they say, and that the department can provide all of the necessary research and notes to members of the committee, so that if they are going to participate in the debate, not just for participating in the debate, but just for further detailing of their information. But also we could issue a statement in the house, but a statement will need an internal response in 2 minutes. The third way forward could be by way of a lecture, a public discussion. I don't know where, but here at the Center for the Book, maybe not here? I had a privilege of hearing PM Lenda delivering very beautiful, but very informative, comprehensive lecture, and people then ask questions and panelists then answer. Now I don't know where it can be held. And then you get different stakeholders, you know, from universities, students, labor, and you invite the ambassador of Sahara, which is South Africa. Don't know, then call an ambassador, whatever he say that. Then you get a person like that. Something like that. If you can just refine this way forward, I would be very prepared. And then, you know, kind of then take a bath.
I think let me start with the last one you have suggested. I think both of them will be fine. Both the parliament as well as the study.
The public lecture.
Correct. Both. Oh. And I try to make a resolution in the house, whatever.
Okay.
Try to make a resolution in the house about that. But what I wanted to find out, which is from the DM, is why do we have diplomatic relations with Morocco? Do the other people for several months agree in a heavy demand? What advantage is that? Do we have we have to keep on? It's a question of being associated with the devil. I'm not sure. It's a question of riding the devil to the gates of hell. That's what it's called. Yeah. I don't know. Can I get a clarity on that part? Secondly, perhaps it should not be asked from the department. But I would think that during the time when we're struggling, we use the workers' party, which is a trade union, to assist in various countries. Whether that our trade union or their trade union or their that particular approach could be used in this particular case, because I think the main thing to hit the capitalists is to put them in their pocket. And until you do that, they will never listen. And I think that perhaps if that can be done, to assist. Thank you very much.
I don't know, I was just saying that the chair, I support the proposal of the public lecture, which needs to be really broadly, you know, to even to the universities, so that they can be able to hear. But the comment is about the topic of specifically the self-determination aspect of the Western Saharan people. So, public lecture.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Wait more something. Hello, Kalia. Hello,
thank you. Just as a suggestion to the ambassador, perhaps to enhance your presentation, if you would have put up a map to actually show visually, you know, Algeria, the border, Morocco, and the partition, so that you know, you can get inside of it visually. Mm-hmm. I think that would have been helpful. You know, Chairperson, it would be great if diplomacy could actually go and take an on-site visit to that country and look at the refugee situation. Those started off as temporary centers, now tent cities. And it is a very appalling situation. So maybe rather than, you know, having a lecture which is like, you know, it's useful and it's informative, but if you go and see for yourself, you get a better understanding of what the situation is. And at the Pan African Parliament, we have a group of interested persons who drew up a resolution, and then we tabled it in the Pan African Parliament, and we debated it for the EU to take it forward, and it was to hold a referendum and for self-determination. It was a very interesting debate. And again, Chairperson, you know, when the Pan-African Parliament sits in the next sitting, I would like to urge this committee to at least attend one of the plenaries there to actually see how we debate our motions. And you know, we are moving from consultative to legislators. While that in itself has got its own problems, it would be useful for this committee to actually come and observe and participate in that plenary. Thank you.
Okay.
Are there any
responses? Yes, Chairperson. To deal with Mr. Yaron Kumarana's question, why do we have diplomatic relations with Morocco? Well, we trade with Morocco. We do. I don't have the trade figures with me right now. Chair, I've tried to ask my colleague on this side, but unfortunately, we don't trade around with us. Now, well, this is the world of diplomacy. It involves compromise. So if there are companies in North Africa that have goods to sell to the market, we sell to the market. Do we impose sanctions on them because of the Sahara situation? Then if that is what the Honourable Fulman is proposing, then I suggest he takes it up by the ANC and the appropriate chamber. I don't see him succeeding with the relationship. Now, Chairperson, just to further explain put in place the history of the situation, on 15th September 2004, South Africa took the decision to recognize the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic. Mm. Now, as a consequence of that decision, Morocco formally downgraded the relations between South Africa and Morocco after the electoral signing for the inauguration of a Sahrawi representative office in Pretoria. Now, in his letter to King Mohammed, then President Beki said, I quote, "For us not to recognize SAVR in this situation is to become an accessory to the denial of the people of Western Sahara of their right to self-determination. This would constitute a grave and unacceptable betrayal of our own struggle. Of the solidarity Morocco extended to us and our commitment to respect the Charter of the United Nations and the Constitutive Act of the African Union." Close to us. So you see, our relations with Morocco go back in the same way that our relations with Algeria go back. Mm. Morocco did assist us during the time of the struggle. They did. Mm. And we have to recognize that. Fine, we're now in a new situation. Do we throw the baby out with bathwater, say to Morocco, get on your back, leave here? Or do we try and engage? The world of diplomacy today is not a diplomat. I'm a politician. And I say things and I see them, and sometimes people try. diplomats have a way of getting around it. And there's still a sense that at the diplomatic level, these matters can be resolved. The question of leverage that I spoke about earlier, all those things will probably come into play. So, Chairperson, that is my response to the Honourable Pumluana. I take note of the point raised by the Honourable Kalyan, and in the future when we speak about Western Sahara, we'll make sure we come up with that and put it up on the screen. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members. I just wanted to comment that our diplomatic relations, by the way, are at the downgraded level of charging on full one.
Oh, no embarrassment, eh?
It's a charge.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much to the department for this presentation. We no longer have time. Honorable Kalyan, you made a very useful point about us visiting the capital in Panama. In fact, it has struck me that...
Chair, I think she was proposing that the committee visit Sahara
both. Both. I did both.
You were saying that we need a multi-party on-site visit to the area. Now whether it will come before the debate or after the debate is something else, but we will make that request. I've just added it as one of the things that we put to in the letter to the speaker. But I was just saying that it just struck me that it is in fact a serious omission on the part of the committee that it does not have a scheduled visit to the Pan African Parliament. The European Parliament has got its own employees and they were one of them. But we need as this committee just to sit in the gallery and hear what is being said about our continent by people who are debating and who have never done
and this. Interact with Committee on International Relations.
Yeah. So as to who will invite us and how are we going to know the program? Because Parliament must also permit us to go there. I think let's just get some arrangement, but that we could spend the whole 5 years without going there, just in, not before the COVID.
Can you say we were there 3 years ago? Yeah, we did go.
This is all the time.
Yeah. We did go, but I think that it can go further because now we speak about cultural engagement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's critical because we went there as oversight because this government is for the parliament. Yeah. But now we have to engage at the Balkan level as it says this. I think it's correct because we cannot have AU Foreign Affairs Committee coming to us. That us going to the AU Foreign Affairs Committee here in the country. Thank you.
I can't.
No,
Okay. No. So we are done with this matter. Department, can I now request you to present from the quarter report? It's called 11. We must be done by 1 or so.
No, by two.
No, by 1 o'clock, we could be done by 1. Over to the department, Honorable Lenda.
Chairperson, I was going to do an overview in the light of our... Suffice to say that I'm going to put you in a capable hand at the DGI and Mr. Wu, who will make the presentation out.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. For the purpose of this report, we are requesting to present it in two parts, one non-financial and the other one financial report, and briefly the...
You see, that is that entrusting us into a warm and capable house does not mean that you must go to the main center and that the entrance you must be appointed as a chief.
So I would like to discuss the matter to my colleagues. The non-financial report will be done by Ms. Doris Cotter, and then that will be followed by the financial report by Ms. Cotter.
And then
Honourable Chair, Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable Members. Firstly, let me then start with the non-financial performance information. We need to then just locate the report within the time period. This was report requested for the fourth quarter of the year 1516. That would then cover the period January to March this year. So just wanted to locate it in that. So at that time, in terms of the international development, for us to deliver against our mandate and our quarterly target at our 80, we need to be noted that at that time we had the rand being very unstable, the general pressure on the economy, which at the point of time is still continuing, the volatility in the commodities market, which had an impact also, as well as the general global instability, particularly the rise in terrorism, if we remember the bombings that we had in some of our European cities, and then of course the presence of international migration. Then the way we've delivered, or the way we have structured our presentation, is according to the budget programs in the department, because the financial performance will then speak to the non-financial performance. In terms of Program 1 administration, it should be noted that that is very much with deal with compliance issues. And then the targets are derived from the standards for the management performance assessment tool that is issued by EPME, as well as DPSA requirements. So if we look at some of the targets that we highlighted in terms of the achievement, the one that is also being monitored by COSAT is 100% compliance with the 30-day period. And of course, we fluctuate sometimes depending on the kind of information that we have to facilitate. So for this fourth quarter, there is a 99.62% achieved in the quarter. However, and the reason why we didn't get 100% is because of the information outstanding. For us, the rating is very important because that allows for top security clearances of our officials, and the department, in terms of the MOU signed to work in the SA, is that we would do field work exercises in terms of the rating of our officials, so we have managed to do 63 of those in the quarter. With regard to our organizational environment, in terms of grievances and disciplinary cases, we will note that there's a particular improvement around our disciplinary cases being finalized within the mandate time period. We are still working with meeting the 30-day time period for grievances. Then, with regard to our consular services, there are two aspects of our consular services. The one is rendered at head office to South African citizens within the country, and this is particularly where your citizens want to travel abroad and they need your documents to be legalized, and that's the service. So we have legalized for this quarter 9,207. The second part of the consular services, those are the consular services that are rendered abroad through our mission. This is, for example, when you have a South African citizen traveling, using the travel documents in distress, mortal remains if there's some disasters or some accidents on that time. So for that time period, we have delivered 198, or we've assisted in 198 South African citizen support. With regards to our training program, and this is particularly taken from our MTSF outcome 12 that talks about need to work towards the professional and the field public service. So we started our training programs, and as the committee would be aware, we have a diplomatic academy as well. So for this program, for this quarter, we then delivered our 27 training programs, which then also includes the protocol training that is being requested by the various levels of government, the SOEs, and any other organization that interact internationally. With regard to the issue that was raised in the NDP, particularly around our research, we have a research unit in the department, so we continue to do roundtable discussions, discussing various topical issues as delivering research papers. So for this quarter, we've then done a research paper concluded on post-2020, the future of the ACT. And then, of course, we had presentations as well, and we had four of those during the period. Then, with regard to our construction in terms of our property portfolio, there were two that we targeted for this year. It was the one in Dar es Salaam and the one in Lilongwe, and we will talk particularly around those when we look at the impact it had on our financial performance as well. At the time of the report, we were not completed, but I can say now that Lilongwe was completed as of today. With regard to that program one, just a brief summary in terms of our administration, our support services that's been rendered to the department. With regard to the substance, we're looking at program two, which is the international relations, particularly focused on your bilateral relations, so your bilateral engagement. The target or the indicator that we have that the department is delivering on or against, it is directly taken from the NCSF outcomes 11, and it's the one with regard to the structured high level. However, at the department level, we have high-level visits as well. With regard to the structured bilateral mechanisms, we did not achieve for the quarter, and then for the year-end, when we come back within a month's time to table our annual report, we will then also have a conversation around our total performance for the year around that. With regard to our high-level engagements, we want to then note the three that have taken place, particularly our three state visits, the ones in Nigeria, Saudi, and the United States Arab Emirates. And when we look at those engagements and we support it, is that we're looking particularly at the work that we do against the 9-point plan as well as our national priorities. So if we look at it, then we will see when we look at the UAE investment and the energy renewable project in South Africa, which is derived particularly from our 9-point plan. We look at increased agricultural and agro-processing, and of course the focus that we have on the blue economy as well. So that's with regard to our bilateral engagements and the platforms we utilize not only to strengthen bilateral relations, but also to advance our national and domestic priorities. Then the second part of our bilateral relations, one is in particular focused on political work, and then of course the next one is the one that is focused on economic diplomacy. And this is the work that is done particularly by our missions in the various countries where we are. Now, the missions and the official definitions are the eyes and ears there. So they need to, they do a market analysis, they look at what is required in South Africa, and then they would identify which platforms to be utilized in order to promote South African products. And then, of course, in some instances where we have relations or where DTI has representation, we get supported, but we know that we don't have DTI representations in many of our countries. So with regard to the platforms that we've utilized, the missions have identified five platforms for the promotion of South African goods. The one is trade and investment, and in that one we've reported 25, trade and investment once again. And once again the focus would be what has been identified at home. How do we link it up with what's available in the country we have at present? Then also with regard to our meetings with our targeted government ministries, the focus here particularly is to identify. So education is one of our national priorities. Identify those countries, the education department, liaise with the education department, link them up with higher education. So that is what our missions would do in terms of meeting with our targeted government ministry. Then when we look at the next three platforms, would be high-level potential investors and importers. Once again, identify who is out in that country, who can be approached, who can be linked to South Africa, who should we have a conversation with. And that is what the role of DERPA is. We're going up there, we're creating the awareness, and we link them up with the appropriate stakeholders in South Africa. Then with the Chambers of Commerce as well, it's once again to look at how can we promote South African business, how we can make market access, should there be trade barriers, then the conversation can happen around how to remove the trade barrier. So we have 38 of those that are taking place. Tourism, of course, is very important in terms of the work that we do. And for this period, we're looking at 27 tourism stakeholders. And here we're looking at where our mission would go to our tour offers. They would engage with brand SA, there was an SA tourism, they would get the documentation, they would meet with the tour operators to make sure that South Africa has a place where the tour operators sell tourist packages as well. So that is work with regard to our program two. With regard to program C, this is particularly our multilateral work that we're doing. So we're looking at our international cooperation, we would look at continental, and then of course our South-South and our North-South cooperation. And in terms of this, because of our limited
finances. And when we came earlier this year and last year, when we tabled our annual performance plan and we shared our reduction in our budget, the department then has to be certain set in terms of which ones can we go to. And the rest of them, where we have a high level engagement from South Africa, and then of course there is really a massive change. So in terms of the tasks that we had, human rights court, being the Commission on Social Development, the Nuclear Security Summit, because nuclear is so very important to us. So those are the only targets we have for international cooperation for quarter four. In this regard to continental cooperation, it should be noted that in the January AU Assembly, South Africa was elected again for a further 2 years to the AUCSC Peace and Security Council. So we concluded our 2 years, but we were re-elected to another 2 years to continue the role that South Africa plays on the continent with regard to peace and security. If we then focus on South-South, it should be noted that this period is also the period where we celebrated the successes that we've achieved under the chairship of the G77. So in January, we handed over the chairship of the G77, and of course, South Africa can celebrate the year that we've certificated the various successes that we've achieved.
I'll come this way. Let's go on our comments.
I'm sorry for interrupting.
Thank you so much. I will share that. And then with regards to South-South, the only target that we had for that quarter was our ministerial fiscal dialogue in terms of the AU. That takes care of our program 3 performance information. With regards to program 4, where we then have state protocol as well as public security. With regards to our state protocol, we know that it is a service that we've agreed to our political principles in terms of international business. We know that it's the work that we do with regards to the diplomatic immunities and privileges that we offer. We're looking at the work that we do at the state protocol language as well. So because it is a service-focused target as well, there would always be 100% in terms of that. With regard to our public diplomacy, the tasks that we set for ourselves in terms of the media briefing, the media statements, the opinion pieces, and the Triple P program, we have delivered on those as well. So we've done the media briefing, the media statements, our opinion pieces. In terms of the Triple P, we targeted 1. However, the minute we targeted 3, the minister has done 1, but at that opportunity, she's been extended the visit to a few other stakeholders in the area as well, and she utilized that opportunity. Honorable Chairperson, this is in the end of the non-financial performance for the department for quarter 4 of the financial year 2016. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much. We will now invite a presentation from Ms. Bengu. Honorable EB, we have already taken a very extensive and very useful discussion on the Western Sahara. Just concluded a discussion around that. We are now taking a presentation from the department on its fourth quarter report.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Thank you, Honorable Chair. In terms of the financial report, before I start to the report, just to indicate to the Honorable Members that the report for the fourth quarter includes the expenditure for the Department of Home Affairs, because this is the period where the budget was and transferred to DECO for the operations of Home Affairs abroad. So in terms of our spending in the department, or in terms of the approved budget for the department for the entire year, we were sitting at 6.5 billion. But in terms of our projection for the fourth quarter, we have projected to spend about 1.9 billion. And in the fourth quarter, what the actual spend is about 2.2 billion, which is 114% of the actual projection. So we'll explain that when I get to the other program. If I look at the economic classification on page 18 of the slide, in terms of our projection, for compensation of employees, we were sitting at 915 million, and what we have spent is about 891 million. And for goods and services, we were projecting 787, which we spent 844. And then for transfer payments, we spent about 107% of our projection. And then for payment for capital assets, we have spent about 150% of our of our projection. The explanation will come as I do the programs, if you allow me, Honorable Chair. Then if we move over to slide number 20, where we show the sub-programs within program 1, but I would like to focus more on slide number 21 for economic classification, where I will be able to outline the overspending there in the, as compared to the projection. In terms of the economic classification, compensation of employees on program 1 alone, we had a projection of 96 million, but we have spent about 101. Now, on goods and services, as you will notice, Honorable Members, that our projection was 382 million, but we have spent 348 million. Now, the overspending in that program under goods and services, the first thing that I would like to highlight to the Honorable Members is that, which is outlined on page 22 and 23, we have an ICT project that we are rolling out in the department, where we are migrating from one service provider to the new service provider, and then there are processes that are taking place there. With that, there has been a delay in the department receiving invoices to pay the service provider because of the transitional arrangement. So that is one of the things that delayed, or that is one of the things that then made the department to overspend on goods and services as compared to the projection, because there are invoices that should have been paid in previous quarters, but they were only paid in the fourth quarter. In addition to the ICT overspending as well around goods and services, I would like to also put it on the table for the Honorable Members to note that our ICT services are US dominated. So as a result of that, they are also affected by the fluctuation of rent, the issue of the bandwidth and all of that. So they are affected by the fluctuation of rent. Hence, there is also an overspending on that one. Now, the third thing that also come out as an overspending in this program, we have audit fees that we pay to the Auditor General for auditing the department. Now, the scope for the Auditor General has been 20 missions per year. Now, in the current financial year, they increased the scope to 30 missions per financial year, which then the most of the audits happened in the last quarter of the financial year, hence the increase in the spending on audit fees. The fourth quarter is around the outstanding invoices for the payment of accommodation for the United Nations and the Pan-African Parliament. Honorable Members, you will know that there are processes in the government whereby you have stakeholders that you work with. In this case, for the department, in terms of leasing the properties in South Africa, we work with stakeholders like public works, of which now we have a system whereby if the service provider is billing you, they bill you through the stakeholder that you work with. So there are delays in that process in terms of the department receiving invoices. So what at the moment we have a system that we have put in place between ourselves and the stakeholders as to fast track the process of the department receiving invoices on time to pay the service providers. So that it doesn't affect the budget of the department, it's either for the next quarter or for the next financial year. And then that covers the overspending on goods and services on Program 1. Basically, those are the main cost drivers in terms of our spending on Program 1 for goods and services. Now, if we look at the payment for capital assets, Honorable Members, you will see that the projection was sitting at 29 million, and the actual, what is spent, is sitting at 45 million. This is as a result of, we have three projects that we were trying to finalize. We have the project in The Hague where the members will note that project was put on hold because of some legal issues that we had with the contractor. Now, in the fourth quarter, we have appointed the legal construction expert so that they can assist us on that legal issue. So that is one of the issues where the overspending has come about. And then the second issue is a delay in the finalization of the two projects that you will know of in the continent, which is Dar es Salaam and Lilongwe. The delays in the finalization then push up the spending to the last quarter of the financial year, which then add up to the closure cost, because one of the projects, which is Lilongwe, was then closed in end of March, with the mission moved in April. So there are some closure costs that we have to pay in the last quarter, which we budgeted for in another quarter of the financial year. So they cover the overspending in the payment of capital expenditure in program one. If you allow Chairperson and honourable members, I will move over to page number 24 of the slide to take you through the spending of Program 2. In terms of our Program 2, international relations, this is the core business of the department. You will notice that this is the core business of the department, and 90% of the spending in this program is happening in missions abroad, which is in Africa, Asia, Middle East, America, and Europe. So the spending in this program was sitting at about 1 billion as compared to 924 million that was projected. And the overall spending in terms of the percentage is 117%. And this is purely the exchange rate fluctuation. You will notice that at some point, the rand to dollar was sitting at about 15 rand at some point, which benefited the department very much in terms of spending. And you will know, and also what I would like the honorable members to take into consideration is that the department has taken up the recommendation that was made by Parliament, that the department, treasury, and the South African Reserve Bank need to sit down and work on this matter. So there is a committee that has been established between the two departments, including the South African Reserve Bank, that is working on the matter of the fluctuation of the rent. Because in all the departments, therefore, is one of the departments that is mostly affected with the fluctuation of the rent. On slide number 25, for economic classification, I think this is where we just try to show you that in terms of the compensation, we have spent about 96%, goods and services, we have spent about 179%. Then that is where you see the impact of the fluctuation of rent, because this is when we pay our rentals to the missions, which are sometimes our money in advance, years in advance, or quarterly in advance, including the payment for capital asset where we bought assets also. They were affected by the fluctuation of the rent. Honourable members and Chairperson, I'd like to move on to slide number 27, where we talk about the international cooperation. This is also the core business of the department, where we're looking at the global system of governance, continental cooperation, South-South cooperation, North-South dialogue. This is mostly our multilateral forum where we deal with here, where you can see what we have done in this. I will talk more when I go to slide number 18. On this one, we have contained costs in this program. I will explain later why we contain costs in this program and how were we able to contain costs in this program. If you allow me, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, we'll move straight to slide number 18. Slide number 18 is talking, it's explaining the state protocol and public diplomacy spending. This program, what we did, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, you will notice that the projection for this program was sitting at about 142 million, and then the actual spending was about 69 million. You will recall that in the beginning of the financial year, we indicated to the Honorable Chairperson and Members that the department is going to host the 25th ordinary session of AU Heads of State Government Summit, which was taking place in June, as well as the HOCAP. And those two were hosted by the department, by South Africa, without getting additional funding from the National Treasury. So this is the program where we reprioritize the funding. As you could see here in the last quarter, the summit took place in June, and then HOCAP took place in December. For those particular quarters, we have overspent the budget. because there was no money. While we were busy reprioritizing the budget of the department, which now you could see in quarter four, that prioritization that we have done is to now offset the offending that we have realized when we were hosting the summit as well as the focus. So the understanding in this program is not an understanding per se, but it's a reprioritization of the budget to cover for those two functions that we were hosting in South Africa without funding or without additional funding for the national center. Also in program, in slide number 31, you could see then that most of our understanding in this program was on goods and services, because when we have to pay for the venues, we have to pay for catering, this is where we save money to be able to accommodate the two summits that South Africa has to host without additional funding. Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, if you allow me, let's move over to slide number 33, where we're looking at program 5, our international transfers. Honorable Chairperson and Members, our international transfers, just to explain, they are denominated in US dollars and also in euros. So they are, this program is also affected by the fluctuation of rand against major foreign currencies. So, and most of the membership fees that we pay in the international organization are paid in the last quarter of the financial year based on the assessments that are done by the international organization. So you will notice that for the transnational agency, which is the African Renaissance Fund, which is paid in rand, 100% was achieved in that area. But when you look at the membership contribution for the other international organizations, you will notice that the department has projected to spend about 393 million of the budget. However, we ended up spending about 428 million in terms of that, which is 108% of the actual projection. This is as a result of the fluctuation of rent. We were paying the membership for United Nations as well as the African Union and other small membership fees that we pay. But basically, that is the spending of the department, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Now, if we move over to slide number 35, we have included slide number 35, which we will still come back to the committee and deal with when we're presenting our annual report. But we're including slide number 35 just to show the Honorable Members that the department overall, in terms of administration and other programs, you will notice that when I presented earlier on, our program 1, which is administration, was spent 160% of the budget. But if you look at the overall spending of the department, administration is within the allocated baseline, which is 100% at the end of the financial year. Then international relations is sitting at 103% because of the fluctuation of rand that I spoke about. And the rest of the program are within the baseline as we tried as a department to contain the cost, even in difficult times where we have the fluctuation of rent, which was not within our control. Deputy Minister, and also Honorable Chair and also Honorable Members, you will notice that in our presentation, we didn't include the audit outcome, even though we are already in August. We are busy finalizing our plan to come and present the annual report to the Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members, where we will also table the audit outcome. But just to indicate to the members that the department has received the audit report or the audit outcome from the Auditor General, which the first thing that they indicated to us, we received an unqualified audit conclusion on the usefulness and the reliability of the performance information in terms of the department. However, it was unfortunate that the department again received a qualified audit opinion on the annual financial statement for the year 15-16. And what AG has indicated is that there are two major issues that are the basis for qualification. One was the non-identification of heritage assets, And secondly is the movable, tangible capital asset and minor asset, which the issue there was the issue of completeness and existence of our assets that we are keeping in the 126 nations abroad. And there are other issues that are raised in issues of supply chain, which is non-compliance with the prison. But Chairperson and Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, I would like just to indicate to you that there are plans that the Department has put in place to deal with the qualification. One of the issues that we are seeing as now, we have just had a workshop with the Auditor General of South Africa as management of the Department, not just the financial practitioners of the Department, but we said Auditor General, let's have a workshop with the management of the Department where you take them through what is it that the Department is not doing right, since we've been having action plan all along, but this action plan seems not to be working. So we had the workshop with the Auditor General, and then they zoom into the root causes of our findings, which now the management is busy working out an action plan to put together that will put us in a better position. Then the second part, the second thing that we did is that we also now, as we are sitting here, there is a workshop that is taking place back at home in Pretoria, where the National Treasury the National Treasury is having a workshop with the management of the Department around the issues of supply chain management, where he is training our management instead of the bid committees, the bid evaluation, the bid specification committee, the bid evaluation, the bid adjudication. So that workshop is taking place so that we can tackle the issues of the supply chain management or tackle the issues of non-compliance. We thought let us do a very vigorous exercise that will turn around the whole situation, because we are really not happy as management of the Department of the Qualification, and we are making sure that we are putting systems in place to deal with that. Honorable Deputy Minister and the Director General, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Bengu, for your presentation on the financial performance of the Department. So, our members, can we have a discussion? Honorable Moise, most welcome. We've taken a discussion earlier on the Sahrawi people or Western Sahara. Now this is the last discussion, which is on the fourth order of the Department. Oh yeah. Also, let's welcome Honorable Dudley. We received your apology that you were attending the Chiefs Forum. Yeah, most welcome. Yeah, over to the members. We note you, Honorable Mpumulwana. Want to have the first fight. Over to you. Yeah. Let's not all other.
I'm impressed. I must be very honest. DM, I think you better have a do with your house, you know, and call these people and just keep them up. They are very good. They know exactly what they're talking about, and they're very key on this. I just wanted to ask one thing on the supply chain management. Otherwise, I'm really very much satisfied with the way you deal with it. I think, supply chain management. I still have a problem. I only just want to find out how do you deal with it in terms of financial management act, provisions of financial in certain countries. I mean, the Treasury has hardly discussed this matter with you, saying
How do you, are you exempt from that deal when it comes to the performance? Because they've got their own laws, they've got their own way of doing things. How do you manage that? The second one, I want to say thank you for at least making a good estimation on the fluctuation of the rand and so on. This particular time around, you have done very well about it. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you, Honorable Kalapa.
Thank you very much, Chair. That's the question on the non-financial. The issue of the diplomatic back in terms of our consular service. I received quite a lot of phone calls from South Africans abroad who are in distress in terms of the diplomatic back in consular services. The evident one was too scary when someone phoned and said, we phoned our mission and the mission just had an answering phone machine and there wasn't any response to it. I think the general thing, especially in Europe and America, there seems to be a problem in terms of consular services and the diplomatic back. And then I think the other one linked to that in consular service team is always a concern in terms of the drug moves. There's a lot of drug moves that get arrested and we find that the parents don't know what happens. The recent one was in Peru or in Brazil where they were detained and then they don't know what processes and steps to follow. I know this is a difficult one. Even myself to handle it, I find it very difficult. And I'm thankful to the department because every time I request that case, they do respond, however uncomfortable they are. The issue of economic diplomacy, I think we agreed on a formula or a template that you should bring to us, where you are quantifying the amount of visits that you do as well as the outcome of those visits, because of, we would like to see whether the visits yield anything in terms of foreign direct investment and in terms of tangible economic benefits. So we said when you bring economic diplomacy, especially the trade and investment and the high-level visits, you just bring the people and the outcomes of those visits in a template format. On the financial side, thank you for putting a disclaimer up front because we're going to ask you about the Auditor General report and you have already indicated to us. We are aware that it will take us before you come clean. You will always receive the qualified, especially because of those two zoning issues that the Auditor General has. But one thing that I would want to ask is the ICT. There's always been an issue with the AG on the ICT and we've got overspending again. In this financial year. What seems to be the problem? And I think it ties into what Honorable Bogana was saying in terms of the supply chain management, because of that where the problem was. And on the issue of the FOCAP and the AU summit, how come that they were not budgeted on here? Because of, I think, FOCAP we have known a long time ago that there will be a FOCAP summit. I know the AU sometimes is crisis management, but I find it very strange that they have not been on the financial planning. Let me also comment you on the issue of engaging the trade as well on the Reserve Bank in terms of the foreign currency fluctuation, because it's always been a funny issue for us. And lastly, let me find out, have you done any planning in terms of the new proposed AU funding model that was adopted now in Kigali? Are you making plans for that? Because of the way it looks, it's going to be a serious issue moving forward. And are you engaging the relevant partners in terms of the proposal that was made for the new AU fund? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Maïla.
Thank you very much, Chair President. Chairperson, indication was made that the Auditor General increased the number of missions to be audited on 20 to 30. Now I would like to find out, when was this made? Was it before the end of the previous financial year, or was it just during the financial year? Because it has some budget implications, it means we should have been given chance to plan for that eventuality. Now, the other issue is the issue of the qualification on asset. You see, Chair, though I appreciate the presentation, I'm getting worried because, you know, before we could be qualified on asset, for 2 years running, the Auditor General was flashing the light that we are likely to be qualified on asset. And ultimately, that now it is dead. Can we just get maybe assurance from the department that the issue of classes can be taken care of, because we don't like this qualification. Thank you. Oh, last bit, maybe I'm saying this because I'm going to be involved. DM. DM. So there was a young man who was on honeymoon in Mozambique, and So there was this up and down that the family was not getting enough assistance. I would just like to get the version of the department language. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable,
yeah, thank you very much for your guidance and articulating so well. I'm happy that you brought the AG to work with you and to see how you can be able to challenge your problem. And I'm of the view that you're going to set the target. And you'll be able to come back here to inform us how are you performing, because really it's not right, as Ntate Maila has alluded, you know, about the qualifications of your report. But we also recommend, you know, the 63 good work security clearance. I think that is excellent. You went about your targets, especially on the security career of the staff, of the employees. I think it's really recommended. But I'm asking myself, this disciplinary hearing, why are you taking on the disciplinary hearing issue? So just you can just tell us with that. But I think it takes a great process to be able to see that there's got a problem and accepting that and even, you know, coming with a solution to rectify that. I think it's very great, as the MC do. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Kalyan, over to you.
Thank you. The report presented is a good one and quite straightforward. I don't think that there's any complications in it. But what I do find difficult to understand is, how hard is it to do this passive audit? It's something that's been recurring over a period of time. So I'm just trying to think, if you stand still in your mission and you do a head count, then you do a furniture count, and you do a car count, and you do a computer count. How hard is it for the person in charge to sit down and count everything that is there and send that information through for someone to quantify it and look at the value of it? I can't believe it can take 3 years to do that. So I still find it difficult that we can't get it set.
DM, the second issue I want to address with you, in regard of non-financials, when it was the bomb blast in Turkey, Istanbul, at the airport, I was watching the visuals on ETV, and it kept saying, the people are trying to contact the Department of Foreign Affairs and nobody is available to take this call. And then a little later it flashed, if any South African wants information, call 08 and the number, which I did. I must say they answered it efficiently. And when I asked why is it that there is a disconnect between the people sitting at the airport and the people in the mission, what's the reason? And I forget his name, I wrote it down in my diary and I don't have my diary now. And very politely said the reason was because there's a lockdown. There was a lockdown in movement. And, okay, I understood that part. But there couldn't have been a lockdown on telecommunications. It says that the cell phones, the signals were jammed. And one understands that the country does that. You go into the security and the... And you damn the stone so that, you know, it happens. I know in Uganda when the president is going by in his convoy, your cell phone is damned. It happens in most of the African countries.
You
mean our parliament? Oh, yes. It's yes, right. Okay. Yeah, now, thanks for reminding me about that. But I'm saying the image that's flashing on ENCA is devil is unavailable in the time of a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I took the time to phone the number and I got the information and understood it immediately what it was. But to those people sitting there in the airport, it was a time of anxiety. It was, you know, not a good time. And then, the whole thing is reflecting on the screen internationally as well. Our department is useless, they can't help anybody.
Yeah.
So, I think that the spokesperson should have clarified eventually, the South African spokesperson should have clarified, this is not only phone this number, somebody should have issued a statement to say, there is a lockdown, there is a high security alert, and that is why our people can't get in a car, taxi, or train, or anything to get to the airport. But, you know, this is another solution. Mm. It's just something that I think I felt quite strongly about, that it's unfortunate that we were portrayed as unreachable in a time of crisis. And you want your citizens to know that if they leave, and you know, just to get to Morocco, Morocco is a very good destination for South Africans. They love to go there on a tourist jaunt. I mean, go watch the papers. Mm. So if there's a problem, what's going to happen? You need to assure your citizens that I'll be there for you in some way. Sorry, if I took too long.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the presentation. I concur that it was a straightforward presentation. But yeah, nevertheless, I think the document was prepared because of this meeting. So as a committee, I think we still need more information. I think I read the things before, Chair, that without information, there's enough committee to become useless. I'm saying this, if you go back to page 6, it's page 8. Yeah, so it's page 8. You talk about that is structured by the federal mechanism, when high level risk engagement and so on, which is very good. But we don't have details, we don't have progress reports, because we are in the oversight of the committee. I think we need to know what is going on, what is the progress report on this one. And on the financial side, Minister Fengo, I just want to note one thing that the membership is so expensive. It's quite expensive, but if you join here, and we just pay on 10 rand. So I should understand why you want to be with them. Yeah, also on page 11, if we can also get a progress report in this one, because I think it's more until the UN Commission, until the local country, yeah, our role in South Africa. I think if we can get a report on this one too, the committee members will be very heavy. The last one, EM. I just want to get a clarity on your case. This was reported in Norway, Oslo, when one of our officials was arrested for drinking driving. And the last one, Chair, is to say this. Because I can see also on the document when you were presenting here, you are saying you also train your staff and it's really good in terms of protocol and so on and so on. But I must also register this one here. I have on two trips, not because of the committee. I have read the one before. Would this committee does not do their oversight? Honorable Kadim was also alluding to the fact. We don't do our oversight. You come here and receive report here and it's very good and that's it. We don't know if what is reported in this committee is a true reflection of what is happening there. I think one of our roles as this committee is to do the oversight, to see for ourselves. That's one. The second one, I have on two trips through other arrangements of the parliament. One was in the US, and I'm glad that you spoke about the media briefing and so on, as department. But what I found is very strange there, because we were there as a country, but we were there as different social parties. The media contacted me as the EFF member through the email to say they want to interview me and the DA. And I agree. And I don't know why the ANC was so skeptical for us to talk to the media, because we went there as a united team of South Africa. But the interview didn't happen. When we heard from the media, SSBC, they told us that no, the ANC blocked them. They said, no, EFF and DA, they can't speak to the media. And I wanted to find out, because from there, from that team, who told you, who can block us to go to the media? It was our own staff. And I didn't want to fight there because we are overseas, we are abroad, so we have to portray a United Front, blah, 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 blah. But I found it very, 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 very awful. But how can a staff member from the department just go and talk to the media on my behalf, not even come to me and tell me that, look, according to our place of the department, you're not supposed to speak to the media. I think it was going to be well and fair. That's one. Secondly, I went to Zambia. I think in Mkhalapa was there. I was very curious, Chair. I was attending the APC again. Staff member of this department. I spoke with the speaker of parliament, Balambet, and then our program ends very early because they put us on the current program to say you are able to talk about platform 1, 2, and 3. And then according to the deployment that I was deployed by the team, my program was going to end very early. I went to the speaker as the head of delegation. I said, speaker, it was December time, I think it was during holiday. Everyone wanted to rush home. So can I go home? Because I don't have anything to do now. And the speaker was very good. I said, yeah, no problem. Everyone to go home, just go home. And then I went to the member of his staff to say, can I get an early flight? She frustrated me. I was frustrated in such a way that I said, I'm going to raise this thing in writing. I'm not a guy game. And then I phoned Parliament guys from Zambia to tell them to change my flight from Zambia to here. Only to find that there is no flight that's actually booked. That member, staff member, was frustrating for no reason. And I got it right back. But before I came back home, I went to her and said, don't play this politics. It's not healthy. Mm-hmm. All of us must be treated very badly. Mm-hmm. Don't lie. Don't prioritize other people over other people. So I'm just raising that on a lighter note today. And to say, if you pay your people, or the staff member, just give assist them that there's no need to cause those problems, I'm sorry, especially if you are away. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Stoker. Honorable Khatere.
Thank you, Jefferson. I'll also concur with my colleagues that the report is good. The issue of going to the financial statement, the issue of the budget report, you come when you give the annual financial statement, when you bring it back, that is there that we can engage, take it out, because there are the same things which are not satisfactory, because we cannot have the same thing coming back as it is. So I think that, but we'll engage later about that. Jefferson, I'd also like to really appreciate your comment that the department try by all means to be within its budget, within its budget, although there is over expenditure on the quarter, but on the overall, it is within the budget. So it means that they took to us what the Minister of Finance said last year to the report, that really we are under stress as a country, we must be responsible. So those savings which were made are really appreciated, because that one is an effort for the entire country. I think it's highly appreciated. But what I like to follow up on the issue of FOCAC. Yes, the FOCAC was a very, very successful forum which was undertaken. And then that around FOCAC, China committed about 100 billion rand to invest in South Africa, which is part of economic development, which must be really appreciated. But what I'm really interested in, how far are the projects which will come there? In the economy, how far are they? Because it is a different matter to have a commitment in paper without a material difference to the people on the ground. Because I think that way, every decision taken, it must affect the people on the ground positively. So how far are the implementation of those projects? I'm just saying it's only one, but I know that there are a lot of engagement, but around this one, because it was one biggest single investment which came in around that. And then number two, because this financial year has come to an end, I see the progress of the long way that has finished. How far is the project of the 10 African Parliament? Because it looks like it is in limbo forever. So I think that when we went there, we promised those guys that we are going to deal with that issue. Can we please come, let's get a proper report on that one. Yeah. Because this another financial aid coming by, we don't see that. It's one of the really important projects which the country is undertaking. How about is that project? It's not here. Yeah. And then on the last issue here is the issue of the people who are in distress, page 5. Yeah. This issue of distress sometimes is continuous. I'll make an example. Those guys whose family members passed on in Nigeria, the case is still going on, even up to now. What support is the department giving to those families now? Because if my step comes in the other financial party, now this is still on. Because it's usually very bad when you have lost a father or a father. When that case is held within court, it is better that the family member is there so that you can see. He or she can see what happened, what is happening to us, because that one will bring closure to that horrific event that takes place. How far are those people still being given support? Yeah. And then when last time we spoke about those guys from the district who arrested in one Arabic country, because they signed the contract which was in Arabic, which they didn't understand. Actually, they said that they... what support are they giving? Yeah. What support are they? Because really, I think as part of Derbo is that when our business people go abroad, they must really be advised. You cannot sign a contract in a foreign language which you do not know. But those people, because unfortunately they can endless up in jail to the report. I asked them questions some time back about it. What has happened to that? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khadere. The chair is always in a very difficult position. He's the last to speak. I just want to start off with the matter that has been raised by Honorable Shopping on being blocked by an official or someone from speaking to the media. Both at the time when I was MEC, Defense Department in Mpumalanga, and the delegations that I have led into the SADC on behalf of the Speaker, twice I had to speak to members who the other one was not conducting himself properly, and the other one had let me not make the example about the country, because you made that point in the SADC. When we were in a certain country, and I was the leader of the delegation in SADC, there was a member who was all over the show with regard to interviews and the TVs and all of these things. I called the member, I had tea with him or her, and I instructed him to stop unless he got my permission, and I threatened either to ground him while we're in that country, and of at the extreme, send him back home. You see, there are certain things that you may or may not do. There is a country position when you travel abroad. And that country position on certain issues must have been clarified by the leader of the delegation with the delegate that when we travel as South Africans to Ukraine or to China or to the USA, on the following matters, these are the country views or decisions or positions. But if a member was to say something in a foreign country on behalf of his or her party, personally, I would say that go to the leader of the delegation and say, look, man, I'm going to take an interview and I want to say something different from what the country stands for on this particular matter. Then let the leader of the delegation know that. Then you discuss whether it will cost any damage. But you can't afford as a delegation to be somewhere and be divided by the media and then just punish the image of it. It can't be. So the leader of the delegation has that responsibility, unfortunately. The other time I was put by someone about the conduct of a particular member in Botswana, who was not attending the conference, he was drinking, he was involved in what is called the sexual harassment, all the number of things like that. I called the department. I said, I hear that there are South Africans in Botswana, and someone has phoned me, and there's a member who's doing the following things. Then I go to the department. Can the department speak to those people in advance? There are things that you cannot do, unfortunately, or you must not do, because you are representing the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa, but you are also representing South Africa. And lastly, there are institutions or individuals that you may not interact with without the knowledge of the delegation. For instance, there are intelligence services in other countries who may want to know certain information. So, when members, whether they are members or officials, when they travel abroad, they must just understand some of these small sensitivities. Want to get into this one? I thought the department would come back, but you can...
No,
I was just clarifying about it. I think specifically to your point, the DM is going to deal with it. To the department, I didn't hear you missing what exactly did you say are the measures that the department is doing or undertaking to deal with the qualified audit opinion that we get from the time. I mean, here you say, the auditor general says, unless we do 1, 2, 3, and 4, and we are going to do this thing will stay with us. Because for now, it seems to stay with the department. And at a public diplomat level, the department is doing very well. At the level of finances, this is a blight in the image of the department. And of course, the other blight, as we all know, is the expenditure because of this unequal financial foreign exchange, dollar and euro. So I didn't hear you that there are firm measures, and what are they, and who is dealing with them. So I think the agent's office can and must advise on this matter, the department. The other one, I don't know whether it would be directed to the department or to TI, but also to the department. And let me now connect it with what we are saying on page 9, on the trade and investment seminars, and then you say, you have 25 trade and investment seminars. Are these enough? Where these trade and investment seminars, where they head overseas to to say South Africa is a good trade destination or they have in South Africa to business people in South Africa about investment and trading opportunities in the continent and in the world. I just want to make one observation, and it's not my original view. Someone actually said it and said that South Africa has a very good footprint, diplomatic footprint, 126 nations. They don't seem to utilize this gain fully in the interest of South Africa from the point of view of trade. And as we speak now, African trade is still at 12%. I don't know, is South Africa not being very aggressive in making sure that we get as much as is possible out of trade, because we are there when it comes to peacemaking, even peace enforcement, peace building within the African continent. What is the trade advantage that we get from this? We were just talking about Morocco. No, Western Sahara. We were talking about the minerals there. The other day we were talking about Cuba and trade in Cuba. You see what the Americans are doing there. They want everything with regard to business to be American. So we've done a lot with Cuba. Now we need to be able to take a trade advantage there. Same with Western Sahara. So and the last one. No, I think somebody has already spoken to the international transfer. It is compulsory that they must be in euros and in dollars, even within the AU. So that makes it very, very expensive. Thank you. Over to the department.
So we are grateful to all of you for your kind words. However, please don't take issue with me if I don't agree with you on some points you raise. The Arum Pumwana, I've always had a personal view of it. The first time I discovered that departments and ministries were cutting champagne, getting drunk, and waking up in the gutter with a severe headache after deliberating an unqualified audit, I asked myself, why? You see, Chairperson, our constitution enjoins us, it compels us to have unqualified audits, because we are using public money. So when officials and even politicians jump for joy and celebrate, I don't go along that stream. I look forward to the day when unqualified audits are the norm. Mm-hmm. There should be the law. So when you open an annual report to the section that deals with the Auditor General's report, you say, I give the department an unqualified audit, there should be no eyebrows raised, because it's a requirement of all of us. So, Honorable Kumwane, I'm sorry, it won't be any dues anywhere. Not in my residence, not anywhere else. Now, there are two other issues, Chair, which are of importance that I think I want to address. The one is the heritage asset, the asset audit. The other is the tragic drowning in Mozambique. The question of heritage assets was brought to my attention recently, and I asked for an explanation. Now, the Honorable Kalyan will need to understand this. Not simply a case of obtaining a quantity, a number of the assets. These are, one, works of art. And two, you will have a work of art that is so old that it qualifies to be a heritage asset. Mm. Who works in these? Firstly, these things are sitting in the embassies. So my question was, why are they there?
Some of them are worth 500,000 rand, if not more. They are pyramids. If those who know about art, pyramids sitting in our embassy, I said, but that's an embassy. Why do they have these works of art costing that sum of money? Well, I didn't get a fact that shot. So to get to the Auditor General's qualified report, I discussed it with the acting DG, and him and I agreed, one, that Durko would have to appoint a curator, and we do that through procurement. So you advertise and say, we want a curator who will go to embassies all over the world to identify which is a work of art, its value, and which is a heritage asset and its value. That's what the Auditor General wants. And only a curator can do that. The ambassador, the official there in the embassy, they're not qualified to do that. You and me, well, let me speak for myself, I'm not a curator. Okay? And so we need to be sure that the person that's going to do that work has the necessary qualifications and is able to give a monetary value to each of those assets and to identify which one is a work of art and which one is a heritage asset. So here, now, Jericho is made up of diplomats. Right? I come back to the point I made with you last night. I said I'm a Chila, and how is a Brazilian diplomat, but when it comes to administration and such matters, it goes out the window. The same with a lot of other people there. So, this is what acting DG and I have agreed to do. We would need to, I assume, persuade the department. This is the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Procure a curator and then send him or her. It's going to be expensive, won't be cheap, all right? And I'm sure that the Auditor General's office will agree with that approach and settle that I want them for. If we don't, next year, we'll be in serious trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chairperson, that's with regard to the assets. I'm very glad that the issue of the tragic drowning in Mozambique was raised. I say that for a number of reasons, Chairperson. I was in Maputo on a Friday, deployed there by our minister to attend the SAIC Council of Ministers meeting. I had struggled to fall asleep, and at about half an hour after midnight, I realized my phone had been ringing, and I drove off. When I looked at the screen, I saw that it was Deputy Minister Kutumana Mela who would be trying to reach me. I called him back. He then said to me that there's a couple from South Africa, from Limpopo, spending their honeymoon there, and the husband has drowned. Or, he said, rather, he has disappeared. That's the word used, because that's how it was explained to him. He gave me the name of the hotel manager where he was staying, and when I rang off, I immediately called the hotel and said to the manager, can I please speak to the wife? The hotel manager said to me, we were forced to select her, she's fast. So that I'm fine, please tell her I called, and I intend calling her tomorrow morning. Council of Ministers meeting began that morning on Friday, and I immediately instructed my officials, gave them the outline of the case, and said to them, please call the hotel, which they did. And the hotel explained to them that the wife is now in hospitalized. The official then immediately called, found out where the family was in Palestine, and advised the family to send someone close to the wife to be with her in Mozambique. By then, Mozambican authorities announced that they were investigating the matter. Now, Chairperson, when I got back home, sitting in my lounge, watching the news, SABC, journalist says, the embassy did absolutely nothing. The Department of Government did absolutely nothing. Well, When I heard that, I used some very unparliamentary and undiplomatic language. I could do that because I'm in my own lounge.
You repeat it?
No, I'm not here. Because, Chairperson, one, there's a principle in journalism that you must afford the right to reply.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Someone should have picked up the phone and phoned the embassy and said, we were running the story, do you care to comment? Someone should have phoned Clayton Moniela and said, we're running the story, would you care to comment? Someone should have phoned our minister and said, we are running the story, would you care to comment? None of that was done. Journalists simply went on camera and said, they did nothing. They're not even here. So, the mother then leaves her home and gets to the Mombela border post. It's discovered she doesn't have her passport. Okay. Local officials then contact Home Affairs in Nelspruit, the mayor, and provide assistance. It's not a 5 minute operation. Getting someone a passport under those circumstances time. But eventually she's given a passport and she's out to enter Mozambique. All of this done by Durco and Home Affairs. Ergo by government. And bear in mind the advice for someone to come to Mozambique to be with a wife who's grieving came from the embassy official, who was supposed to have done nothing. Now, this is the difficult part. When the poor wife was asked to explain what happened, she said, my husband was standing in the water and he was splashing me with water. I turned my back and I was on my cell phone. When I turned around to tell him to stop, he had disappeared. Look, bear in mind, she's in enormous pain, she's grieving. So in that situation, we don't say things rationally. You know, but coming out of it, this, it sounds so odd. And understandably, it was a big authority that said they're going to investigate. And they asked that she not leave Mozambique. Which is why we advised that somebody be with her. She wasn't under arrest, but they just needed her to be there. The difficult part for us was getting even some other man to call me back to Chambers and said, please, man, can you lean on the Mozambican embassy? I said, what for? He says, no. People who have been to Mozambique know this. That when someone drowns, the Mozambican authorities, unlike us, don't send their divers to find the body. They sit on the shore, Mozambique, and wait for the body to wash. Now, okay, I wasn't aware of that. Told the ambassador, I said, look, please use your influence by the time back home. Click lean on them and tell them they have to do something.
Mm.
But in the meantime, NSRI in South Africa offered to go and do that, to dive the body. The Mozambican said, no, sure. Don't need you.
Okay.
I'm not aware that the body was eventually found. I understand the poor wife was allowed to leave. And so that's where that matter stands. One of the challenges which Jaco has faced for a long time is the question of, and this applies to members of parliament, elected public representatives, officials, the like. People go overseas across the border. Never, never, never inform the nearest embassy or consulate of their
presence.
So it's a register of South Africans abroad.
Mm-hmm.
It's an acronym. Register of South. You can do it online. You can simply say to Derko, I will be arriving on this day, I'll be staying at this hotel or on this street, and I'll be there for so long. Then Derko is aware that you are there, and the embassy or the consulate is alerted to that fact, so that if something goes wrong, you'll be in an accident, you'll be arrested, you fall ill, they can assist you. It's extremely difficult when we phone Derko from here.
phoning the embassy in Maputo and trying to get someone to assist, it's extremely difficult. So Chair, that's with regard to that. We are not happy with the outcome, but there you have it. Now, I'm going to deal with the Honorable Shobha raised a few points that I want to deal with, Chair. Norway Oslo, the drunk driving case, the person has been recalled, and he's facing disciplinary charges. That's a disciplinary matter. No, we don't have to find that. Chair, this is where you see, when the Honorable Shobha says a member of Durko's, a Durko staff member, blocked their interview. That's my difficulty. It's not a Durko staff member's responsibility to do that. It's not. They shouldn't be doing that. It's not their responsibility. The leader of delegation can do that, and then the two of you have it out. Yes. But a Durko staff member should not be blocking you from being interviewed by the way, this SABC that requested the interview. It's not Fox News. If it's Fox News, then I'll understand. I would also say, please check where this is a right-wing channel, and be careful what you say to them. And the same applies to the Zambian situation. Durko officials should never have become involved in that situation. Pan-African Parliament Progress, building plans have been approved. That was approved prior to the election. Right? We don't expect any hitches or glitches, given that there's now a new government in China. And we expect that will be the case.
No.
It's
in my hands.
All right.
Sorry, can I just on that point, Mr. At the last plenary of the Pan African Parliament, which was in May, the president announced that there was going to be soil turning. Do you call it
soil?
Yes. And he was awaiting that event to happen in May, but I don't think it happened.
The president of
South Africa or the president of PAC? The president of PAC said he was advised that was going to take place and he was awaiting it to happen. Yeah. Well, and he also missed us very badly because it didn't happen.
Well, I've had problems with that gentleman for some time.
Tell me about it.
No difference. I've been with him all the things. I've been with him to Sahrawi. He disses South Africa constantly. And at some point, I'm going to ask Darko, if he don't do it, I will do it. I will go to him wherever he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell him to stop.
Thank
in
you.
Language that won't be pretty. Now, because anyone, Chairperson, anyone he meets from Africa, then he sounds off about that. Yes. But, Chairperson, I'm trying to understand, sitting very calmly here, how does a person sign a document that's in Arabic, which you don't understand? If you sign it, you're saying, I understand what's in the document. So really, No. You don't have a case. Why did you sign it? By signing it, you're saying, I understand what's written here.
Yeah, I don't.
That's the difficulty. And what does anyone do then? He's laughing because I have it. It's true. All right. No response from the embassy, Istanbul, Gomlar. I agree with you. I agree. I have no defense. Because it's not the first time it happened.
Yes.
But if there was a lockdown, then they should have come on South African television and explained. When was the orders of 30 missions done? I'm going to do that to Mayor Benindu and or the acting DG. I agree with you, Honorable Mokalapa. The question of the answering services, that's unacceptable.
The drug mules, well, it's a perennial problem. They talk about, I think it comes from the DA, doing an exchange. I'm not sure that our courts would like that. So even if we agree to legislation, someone may challenge it, and of course I have the convention rule against. Why should we do that? You go there and you commit the crime. Now, we're hit over the head because we stopped on crime. Yes, criminals committing crimes. And you say, no, be soft on it. Bring them back home. That's a contradiction. The new AU funding model, I think that Action DG and Nathango will deal with. What else have I looked out with? So, can I leave you to deal with that, Nathango? Chairperson, that's my mind. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DM. Yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman Member. People in this place, just have to add on what the DM has already said. We should be having full-time consular, people providing consular service. But due to all what we know, that missions are not well-staffed to do, and everyone else has to do that over and above whatever it has to be done. But that is not no excuse for us. We're trying to look, now that our country, I mean, we've become global, the demand has expanded, but it's not as necessary because it's human resource. And then with regard to, for example, the example in Nigeria, we've joined the interdepartmental mechanisms, we're part of it from the beginning to the end until the time when all the remains were returned. And then beyond that, you see the Department of Social Development, within the multidisciplinary team that was handling the post-event itself there. So, the on-body findings that we have to repeat it even though it was said, we have already started. We really discovered that it would be better to be proactive, deal with what has been pointed to us, as she has already alluded to. So far, we have already had a meeting with the Auditor General, identified those root causes, and we are working on them, especially the heritage asset part of it, as well as the cleaning of the asset register. Honorable members will notice that, you know, unlike any other, we have 4 years, 10 turnover. 4 years, people go in, and 4 years, they finish their tour duty. Four years, go on. This business uncontinuity is also identified as one of the loopholes in which the transitioning for each and every individual that has to go there, including the skills base. Where I'm thinking I can have an office with basic skills in finance, human resource, and other things, but when you get posted as an administrator, you come in from a section that was dealing with finance only, or human resource only, or else, when you go there, we expect you to be able to do all these things. Here are some of the skills that we want to give, broader skills to those people who are responsible for administration. So indeed, the findings about that is not much about what we don't do at the head of it. Whatever affects, I mean, a financial statement, we have to populate. We populate out of the information given, which makes, in most cases, sometimes the difference in an inventory and a register becomes an issue, where people think they have done verification. Only compile an inventory. But if you take that information back, you realize that it does not help to compile a register. These are some of the things that he said. Once the report is out as it is now, we'll not wait until the start of the round of audit process. But by the time they start, we should be able to overcome it. With focus project, as a department we are coordinating, sector departments under whom those projects fall are responsible for that. But what has happened already is that we discovered that most of the projects that were identified, majority of them were not at a bankable stage. To qualify for a funding, the project should be bankable in the sense that the feasibility study and all are related matters, which is our weakness in the sense that our project management approach to how we want projects to be done almost disqualifies us from immediately getting things. But We're working with departments and the delegation has already gone to Beijing to solidify matters about it. And I believe would was the one that currently has the certificate of eligibility. And then I'm trying to take that also not. Okay. The Turkish, for the only Turkish event, it goes back to what I call consular work and something that you don't have the country. Every time citizens of a country travel, you are living before proactively, not only important people. There must be some form of saying, we are visiting Swaziland 24 comments. On the first day, whatever will be at a particular place. It facilitates to them any disaster, be it unforeseen or man-made, etc. So the problem is that the countries are vast, the missions are in particular areas, there are only five people in there. The average number of people in a mission are mostly 5-6. And then when something happens with a problem, but I must acknowledge the role that our mission plays. Would they did account at some point, send us the names of travelers at the airport and they were updating us almost hours. So say, so far we have not accounted for the photos. But it was a second rescue kind of a situation where we did not proactively. Like in countries where this is transit, even if it is, people are in transit, if you plan, I mean, you indicate that you're going to Canada via Dubai, I mean, the mission in Dubai should be able to know exactly that. You know, we may not be equal to the task in dealing with all the citizens, but some preliminary information can assist us to be useful to the to the citizens. We really felt like as we review our mission structure, some basic positions such as because the consular service is civic service abroad. The main function is to serve the interests of citizens abroad. But if you only have a counselor, an admin person, head of mission, and the rest is people have to travel. So where and time those are not the same, people may not be able to be equal to the task of even doing effort duty to ensure that everything goes well. I must just hand over to my colleague to go to the other highlights in the interest of time.
Thank you, Acting DG. The only two issues, I think that most of the issues that you've dealt with the Honorable Deputy Minister, the issue that I will cover is the issue of the AU FOCAC. Why was it not budgeted for? AU decided only in January that South Africa would be hosting because TED could not host. Now, if they decided in January, the budget process had already passed and the summit was expected to be in June. And then with the FOCAC, yes, we knew as a department and South Africa it would have FOCAC, but it was planned at a ministerial level. But now the change which came on was that it's now at a head of state level. Now there are protocol cases that have to be accorded to the head of state, including the security around that. So that was the major expenditure that was not budgeted for as a department, which we had to absorb within the budget of the department. Then the issue of the AU funding model, the department together with National Treasury are working into that. It's one of the issues that we have brought onto the table with the Mincombat, but we were then in agreement with National Treasury to say who must then put this matter on the table, which we are saying Treasury should take lead on the issue of the AU funding model in the Mincombat. Failure to get funding through the Mincombat, we will then move to the adjusted estimate by the committee where we will be able to put forward the issue. But we are going there as a team of the National Treasury for that funding model. And then the last issue I think that I have to cover is the issue of the supply chain with the mission. This is one area where AG has raised it, but what they said this year, there is improvement in that area because what the department has done, we have developed a supply chain management framework that covers how the mission should deal with the issues where they don't have free quotation. We also have included that in the financial delegation of authority,
where then we said, if you don't have three quotations, because it's a requirement, we can't run away from, then what we agreed upon is that you get, if you don't get three quotations, the framework allows you to then give reasons and evidence why that could not be get, and then a delegated authority will then approve that with supporting documents, which we have seen it working very well with the audit of 2015-16. AG accepted that in the meeting. So that is the framework that now we are going, we are enrolling all our mission press with the training that we're going to have during the midterm budget review. Those are the things that we'll be covering with the missions abroad. The last part is the issue of the audit fees. When did the department know about the increase of the audit scope? The department received the engagement letter for the audit in August. Like right now, we'll be having a meeting this August, where we'll be presented with the engagement letter, and the engagement letter talks to the audit of the year 15-16. So it's already in the financial year, where now you are told that, okay, the scope now has increased so that we are able to cover all the corners from 20 to 30. So if you are given an engagement letter in August, and they are saying the audit is going to start next month in September, so as a department, we had to quickly go back and reprioritize and look at how we can quickly deal with the issue. Hence, we then be able to reprioritize. But because when we were doing our projection from the beginning of the financial year, that was not in place. Our fourth quarter project, projection did not take that into consideration. And overall, in terms of the budget, we then reprioritized the budget to cover for us. Thank you, Honorable DM, and thank you.
Thank you very much.
If I may request, we have here a report which we want to present to you as a portfolio committee, which sets out it doesn't effectively deal with your concern, which we share, which is that interactive trade is appalling. It's something like 12%. So we want to give this to you. It essentially sets out what Africa is doing on the continent, by way of saying. Chair, I want to use Ethiopia as an example to show the enormity of the problem we're facing in so far as interaction. Ethiopia is supposed to have the best furniture industry on continent, and one of the best in the world. Where does Ethiopia source its timber in the furniture industry? Not the African continent. Ethiopia sources its timber from Australia. Just down the road is the DRC. Massive virgin forest, never touched. There's timber and plenty. There is no road, no rail, no link between Ethiopia and the DRC. So you see, Chair, when we speak about intra-Africa trade, we need to also understand, together with that, the challenges that we face in terms of infrastructure and other dynamics, political as well. So it's not that easy. Chair, you raised the question of Cuba, and now that the U.S. is trading so well with Cuba, well, they're quite far from Cuba. And this has been raised as a problem by many of South African businesses. You say, get there is a mission.
Absolutely.
You see, and so think about sending how many million loaves of bread to Cuba. How would you do that? just to use a ridiculous example, but there you have it. Whereas in the case of the USA, Cuba is on their doorstep. You see? And so the costs of doing trade are a lot different than
Thank you very much.
1 minute.
One minute.
Come on now.
1 minute.
Yes.
Did
you? Capital has been shown. This is where we don't work. The 90 days to deal with disciplinary action, the 30 days of commitment, are part of the reason why we came to this honorable forum and request that we have a bill that will help us to deal with the geographic threat as well as the jurisdictions in which we work. So in most cases, the 90 days is meant, I mean, you can fly into Pretoria to do a case and come back. But for us to fly to Norway or to New Zealand, we need some days. So it takes long in most cases. You have to fly the whole panel, chairperson, presiding officer, all those kinds of things. In most cases, the witnesses will be in the mission. And usually, in terms of the Fair Labor Act in Section 23, the employee is entitled to fair quotas. And usually, it gets used as a strategy to even delay. Same example as what is happening now. Today, I want so-and-so to testify, I mean, to be a witness, and sometimes decide whether that person should be flown at the department or not. It's an area that, when it is one size fits all, we would deal with everyone, I mean, everywhere in the world, are highly disadvantaged. However, we're trying to arrest us. We don't hide behind it, we try all our best to ensure that we deal with those cases within the period that is stipulated.
Yeah, you know, when you say it in English, I think you would say it's consequence management. But if it was African, it would be very direct. That's why I like Africa.
All right, thank you, Chairperson. I really take an issue about the two responses which were done on my side, all the questions Chair raised. First of all, Chair, you go to any country, I think that the DECO, the Central Department, is there to provide the services to the South Africans which are across. So if you go, let's say I go to Brazil, I want to go and open a business there, I think DECO must be able to warn me that yes, go and open a business there, but here are the challenges 1, 2, 3, 4. That's what other countries are doing, good effort, so that the people don't fall in the trap. Because those guys who went to Dubai, they went to Dubai because of one of these things which are done by the department. Bringing people together, and then here are the business opportunities, but you cannot provide, cannot come with a warning sign. But when you go there, these are the areas, these are the things which must do. I think that government is taking responsibility here. Now, I don't think that I agree with it. It is wrong. It must provide the warning for the people as it deals with that. The same with the people who passed on. The state did a wonderful work. It did a wonderful work in helping the people who are there in Nigeria. But the issue of helping them because it is in the public land is very sad. I think that when they are alone, that's where they need help more. It's very sad that I'll be very disturbed. If that court case goes through there, there's no representative of South Africa there to go and report that to the family. It should be the shifting of responsibility again with the department. I'm not convinced, acting director general, that this thing was now the issue of social development. Not the issue of the social development. It's occurring in Nigeria, and the department which is responsible for South Africa outside the country is DERCO. So DERCO must ensure that whatever happens in that case, it must be able to report. How are they going to report that to the family? So I think that DERCO must take its responsibility. Thank you, Chief.
Only one announcement. We have received a request from the European Union Foreign Affairs Committee to have an engagement with our committee. Now we think before that must happen, we must take a very extensive discussion from their government and to make into the IGD next week on the global impact of Brexit on South Africa and all of the other dimensions about the withdrawal of Britain from the EU, and whether there are other countries that are likely to do the same thing. So, because we don't know what the European Union is going to raise, but we might be better school. So we'll be writing, we have not yet written a letter to the Minister, we'll be writing a letter. But we are just advising the department to make preparations in that regard. In any case, because it happened during the research, members cannot, favor this information in this regard. And with that, we would like to thank the Deputy Minister Lenda and the officials for a very informative presentation, and the honorable members for a very constructive engagement. And I think we are now better educated. And thank you very much for your view.
thank you very much also to Honorable EP for calling in. We would have benefited from some of your views on Western Sahara. I have Iman, the meeting is not over here. I have advised the committee secretary to alert you about our meeting and the agenda so that you can choose a seat. Lubaba?
Oh, thank you, sir. Share the presentation on the area of the project presented.
We're kind of back, bye-bye.
On the ALF.
Yes.
Okay.
Can I be guided?
Chairperson, this is a final, the fourth quarter report, which basically shows the financial year for the Dutch report. This report is during this year. We are going to have the annual report, which is going to come to us very soon. We have to engage thoroughly on that. We know that even there's a tail down in the south of Africa. So let's take it together with the annual report. I think I'm going to make it very good.
Are you persuaded?
Yes.
Lubabalo? Okay, if when you're not a member, if the members agree, but when you're advising, I was thinking about you. Okay, thank you. There's a new process that every quarter, we must write a report similar to what we do for the tribunal. So if we omit it, we will fail to comply. There is a report that we say within the house. When? After this meeting, I'll compile the report which Usisina will edit and next week it will be published in the HQ. It's not possible that when we take it to Catalan Brexit next week, someone just deal with the ALF.
Yeah.
Let me connect another.
If we complete the process.
See, where we are now, the mood is that the meeting is The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.